This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. A new study just published in the journal Climatic Change has for the first time linked the impact of carbon emissions directly to those companies that produce the emissions. Corporations like ExxonMobil, whose former executives wield great political power in the U.S. government, are particularly responsible for the devastating effects of climate change, and now we can estimate exactly how much. As this year's hurricane season wreaks massive destruction across the U.S. and Caribbean, the question of who is responsible for stronger storms, rising sea levels, and more is a critical one. My guest is Brenda Eckwurzel. She is a senior climate scientist and the director of the Climate Science for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's also the lead author of the study in question. Welcome to the program, Brenda.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you as well. This study is really interesting because, of course, when we see the heartbreaking images of Hurricane Harvey and Irma and the wildfires on the West Coast, of course, people want to know, well, why is this happening? We have hurricanes every year. Why are we breaking records every year? And to be able to clearly identify who is responsible is certainly helpful, ethically, legally, etc. So how exactly does your study find? What does it, how does it draw the line between the companies in question and the impacts on the ground?
Sure. Of course, the study of extreme events that are sometimes more severe than we could possibly have a century ago before pre-industrial, before emissions of industrial carbon dioxide and methane were added to our atmosphere. We can see some of these extreme precipitation events and extreme heat waves and so forth that are would hardly be possible compared to before. And that's a new field of science that's gotten much more precise, and that's called extreme event attribution to all human activities. This particular study is looking at the contribution of emissions tied back to major carbon producers that are resulting in the bigger changes overall that we're seeing. Increase of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, increase in global average surface temperature for the Earth, and also increase in global sea level rise. So for the first time, we are able to calculate and tie back to emissions traced back to specific companies how much warmer the Earth is today and how much higher the seas are.
In order to determine the responsibility of these corporations, don't you need to know how much carbon they've actually burned? Because how would you figure out which company is responsible for how much?
That's a good question. It actually, the start of this study was when we realized that Rick Heaty, who's one of our co-authors, he published a paper in 2014 that looked at the annual reports of coal, oil, gas, and cement manufacturers all the way back to 1854 through to the year 2010. And looking at those annual reports, the companies report how much carbon dioxide and methane emissions happened during extraction of coal, for example, and the production of the fossil fuels all the way to the point of sale. And when you sell coal, oil, and gas for energy use, there are some predefined relationships that when we burn that coal, oil, we know how much carbon dioxide is released to the atmosphere, and that's the bulk of it. So it's all the way from extraction, production, through to the point of sale for energy use, which we know results in carbon dioxide emissions, carbon overload of our atmosphere.
So you have your paper basically looked at 83 producers of coal, oil, and natural gas, and then 7 cement manufacturers. This was surprising to me. How do cement manufacturers contribute to global warming?
Well, it's pretty interesting. Cement is made from lime or limestone rocks and things like that. It's calcium carbonate. And so during the production process, it actually releases carbon dioxide. So that's just one of the byproducts of using cement.
So basically, you don't even have to be burning fossil fuels if you are engaged in a lot of building. You are also contributing to climate change.
Yes,
Wow.
that's true. The demand for cement is there. But the top carbon producers that are industrial and investor-owned are essentially the coal, oil, and natural gas.
And of the coal, oil, and natural gas, can we go through some of the corporations? I mentioned ExxonMobil. It's the largest corporation in the world. Our former CEO Rex Tillerson is now our State Department head, which is, we could do a whole story on that by itself. And ExxonMobil is interesting given that we know that ExxonMobil hired scientists decades ago to study whether climate change was a real phenomenon. Found that it was, and then buried that information, right?
Yeah, you bring up a very good point because essentially, even though Rikide's data goes back to almost the early dawn of the Industrial Revolution, at that start, very few people really understood that carbon dioxide accumulating in the atmosphere could shift our climate. So there's nothing blameworthy about selling fossil fuels to those who wanted to buy them. However, as you mentioned, we know that through information from scientists within major fossil fuel companies, they knew the harm of their product. And so we picked the year 1980 when the American Petroleum Institute gathered several major fossil fuel companies to share information about the latest science. And there was ample evidence earlier, but we just wanted to say, when should a responsible company know about the harm of their product, such as asbestos manufacturer or a manufacturer of lead or a tobacco manufacturer? At some point, you realize the science is in, there is harm for selling your product. So we picked the date 1980 to 2010, and we can use in our well-established climate model, what if we okay, have all the emissions from all sources, natural and industrial, all the way up to the year 1980, and let's just stop, turn off the emissions from 90 major carbon producers. And what we see is that it's surprising how much happened in just the last 30 years. For example, if we look at the 1880 to 2010 period of increase in global average temperature, nearly half is from just these 90 carbon producers. If we just look at the 1980 to 2010 proportion of that, it's almost a third. So you realize that it's a big proportion coming from just the last 30 years.
Wow, so we've ramped up the fossil fuel burning, and of course, the cumulative effect is what matters, right? Carbon dioxide doesn't leak out of our atmosphere into space, it stays in our atmosphere.
Well, that's part of what the power of having the annual reports, because we could put the carbon dioxide and methane emissions into the model. It goes into the atmosphere in a partition. Some of it goes into trees on land, and some of it goes into the ocean and organisms that are there taking up carbon dioxide as well as dissolving in the ocean. It becomes part of the carbon cycle. And then we know how much remains in the atmosphere, and that's lethal for us because that carbon overload is what's warming the surface temperature of the Earth and eventually leading to sea level rise.
So, aside from ExxonMobil, there are other US companies, and then there are Chinese companies. Russia's company, Mexico, produces tremendous amounts of oil. So, let's focus on the American companies first. You and I are in the US. We have the potential to have much more leverage over US companies than we do over, say, Gazprom in Russia. Aside from ExxonMobil, which other US manufacturers of fossil fuels are in this study?
So what we were really looking at is the major investor-owned, for example, if you want to just take a slice, and just the let's just take seven, which includes a French one as well. But these are investor-owned that anyone in the world can buy shares in these companies. So it's interest to shareholders. So you have Exxon, Chevron, BP, Conoco, Shell, Peabody, and Total. If you look at that, and in terms of global average temperature increase, it's about 10% of the rise from 1880 to 2010. I mean, 10%, just
Wow.
those seven. It's
Wow.
huge. And if you look at sea level rise, that is equivalent, if you look at just the emissions from 1980 to 2010 from just Exxon, Chevron, BP, Conoco, Shell, and Peabody, that's like Niagara Falls flowing for 18 years, the contribution to sea level rise.
Wow. So that's the American companies. Do the American companies eclipse other companies? I noticed Saudi's Aramco is a huge producer of oil as well.
It is huge. And in fact, those companies like BP is British Petroleum,
right,
is in Britain. Shell is the Netherlands. Royal Dutch Shell. So and Total is France and things like that. But these are multinational corporations. I mean, you see, they're extracting fuels from many places around the world, and they're supplying them to different countries as well. So these are really multinational companies. Mm-hmm. So what you say, like Saudi Aramco, we definitely see an increase in the 1980 to 2010. They're the top. Of the top 20, Saudi Aramco is the top percentage-wise contributor to global average temperature increase from just the 1980 to 2010 emissions traced back to Saudi Aramco. And then you have Gazprom, and then from Russia, and then ExxonMobil is the top three for that 1980 to 2010 for global average temperature.
Where does PetroChina fall into this? China is seen as a rising major player on the world stage where oil is concerned. We just covered, in fact, a couple of days ago that its supply of oil to North Korea is becoming a political issue. And in global negotiations over climate change at the United Nations, China is seen as one of the fastest growing contributors to climate change. Where does PetroChina figure into this?
They're definitely in they're a major carbon producer, and they're what we call majority state-owned. So you could, in theory, buy some shares, but China owns the majority of the shares. So PetroChina. So there's PetroChina is in the majority carbon majors that are majority state-owned and investor-owned. As you said, those are the 81 altogether. So there's Rikidi divided them up by investor-owned. There's 50 of those. And then there's 31 majority state-owned, including PetroChina, Gazprom, and things like Petróleos de Venezuela.
Those are ostensibly sort of state-owned, but not purely state-owned.
They're not purely, yep. And then the remainder tend to be things like the former Soviet Union, the coal production and gas, but now you have Gazprom. And then there is coal from China. So that's more centrally planned state. Owned companies, essentially.
And let's actually talk about within the sort of spectrum of fossil fuels themselves. You have the oil, you've got the gas, you've got the coal, and then there's the small contribution from cement. But within oil, gas, and coal, which one contributes most to climate change?
Essentially, it's just a dozen or so that are really, a handful and really say the top 20 of investor-owned and state-owned that are consistently across carbon dioxide and the contributors to global average temperature and then sea level rise. So there's seven investor-owned and seven majority state-owned, that, especially investor-owned, that they're consistently within those top 20. They shift around a little bit depending on their historical emissions, and when they're having more recent emissions, they shift a tiny bit. But basically, there's a dozen of them that are major players contributing to the problem.
How accurate are these findings? I mean, of course, whenever you do studies like these are estimates, there are error bars, or ranges of results. If, say, somebody were to want to take a particular company to court and want to use this study as a basis for their lawsuit to say, your corporation is responsible for this percentage of sea level rise, how confident would they be in the study's results?
Well, there's an appendix and a table, and it shows the uncertainty for each individual carbon producer and across a different range of assumptions that are there. But the important part is that we do not assert that these percentages that we can calculate equal responsibility. What we say is that we know the that it's traced back to these, and we can measure this change. What we know is that juries, policy, and legal settings would take perhaps other things into consideration. For example, what if certain major fossil fuel companies had an outsized influence on sowing doubt about the harms of their product, and then there were different decisions? So, because we've known for a long time that fossil fuels are the largest contributor to climate change, but we didn't really concentrate on the specific companies' products and that have caused the earth to warm. So now that we have those, it's much easier for people to see the impact of the major cause of climate change. And other factors will come into play. Some companies may have invested more in trying to live within a world that has the Paris Climate Agreement, and we want to keep it to 2 degrees Celsius. Or are there companies that are trying to extract more and have very high intensity carbon extractive policies that are very hard to get carbon fuels that release even more carbon emissions into the atmosphere and are go way beyond a 2 degrees Celsius world, or have not invested in carbon capture and storage or other types of things that could have been a different outcome. So that's something that as a scientist, I can calculate the numbers that can be in the impacts, but I think that ethicists, juries, policymakers, governments can think about those other factors to think about responsibility. The thing that we're trying to raise is that for years, the world has been putting that burden on countries. That's the Paris Climate Agreement. Essentially, all the emissions traced back to countries is bearing the brunt of climate adaptation costs and climate responses to major disasters that have influence by climate.
So your study identifies the corporate actors, the investor-owned corporate actors that actually are more directly responsible.
And they have to be in the mix. That's what we're saying. Hmm. Not zero.
Because these are, because you've specifically looked at investor-owned companies, is there potential for leverage by investors themselves?
Well, we do have requests from shareholders who are trying to look at the long-term risks of the companies and those that are responsible and are living within a Paris Climate Agreement world. That helps us stay below 2 degrees Celsius, which can be more manageable than a world which, with unabated extractive industries powering our energy use. For example, it's not necessarily the activities we're doing, it's the choice of why are we still so dependent on using fossil fuels to turn on the lights and move us through space.
Yeah. Well, that is a very good question to end on. Brenda, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link directly to the article from our website later today if any of those of our audience are interested in looking at the actual data. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guest is Brenda Ekwerzel. She's a senior climate scientist and the director of climate science for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We've been discussing the study that she's a lead author of, which helps to identify carbon polluters. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.